Did that work?
Oh, it did.
All right, there we go. All right. First official podcast launch. We're really looking forward to it. As of 10:58 a.m., we don't officially have a name for it, but when this is released, there'll be a name for all of our listeners. Thank you so much for joining in. My name is NJ Brown. Joining us is also joining me is our co-host, Gerald Sullivan. Jerry, how you doing?
I'm great. Great. Happy to be here.
And it's really exciting. This is really something that kind of put together, we've been talking about it for like a week or so. And, you know, it just was like the best way to do is just to launch in and get it done.
Dive
in. So for everyone listening, I'm NJ and I'm a huge Yankee fan. And Jerry is a huge Red Sox fan. So, you know, trying to bridge the rivalry together and have a point of common interest between the two of us because we're just huge baseball fans at the end of the day. So I wanted to start off, Jerry, by how you just talk about how the Red Sox are doing and how you're feeling about the Red Sox season.
Well, you know, just tanking for Jack Leiter, I guess, in the end, right? Is that how you say his name? Jack Leiter, Jack Leiter? I don't know. He's like the number two pick. They're not going to get the number one pick because the Pirates are the best at being bad, but number two pick, no, they're really bad. Like, there's really not, I mean, there's some positives you could take from the season, like Verdugo and Devers have been great, and Xander Bogaerts has been okay. There's been a lot of negatives, like Chris Sale got hurt, Eduardo Rodriguez had coronavirus really bad after effects. JD Martinez was awful. The bullpen was bad. Like, there's not much you could take from the season, but at least Verdugo and Devers were good.
Yeah, I mean, you got to look somewhere. I mean, Verdugo, considering who he was traded for, you know, obviously Mookie Betts, he's not ever going to be a Mookie Betts, but, you know, he's a very reliable, like, player. So it's not like you totally, you know, traded him for someone like Shane Robinson. You know, you got an actual, like, MLB-ready, could, you know, be in a couple All-Star games in the future type player.
Yeah, I mean, like, I feel like his ceiling is, like, what Benintendi's was supposed to be, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I keep forgetting about Benintendi. Like, what do you think?
That's another negative.
Yeah, I was going to say, what do you think is going on there? Like, how do you think the Benintendi is going to go with the Sox for the future?
I mean, I think he'll be back next year. I think he just had a bad year. I mean, maybe he did get hurt at first. I thought they kind of, like, they put him on the injured list. I thought it was, like, one of those things where, like, you kind of make up an injury for the guy just so he can get a few days off to regain his composure, I guess. But, I mean, he's been out since like the 15th or 20th game of the year. So I don't think, like, and he's not coming back. They've already said he's not coming back. So, but I think he'll be back next year. I still think they see something in him. I still think he could be great because he had a couple of great seasons a few years ago. So
yeah. I never forget that catch against the the Astros in 2018.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That was huge. I remember watching that and I was like, there's no shot. Cause obviously I was rooting for the Astros at the time before they became huge cheaters. And I was looking forward to, I was like, oh, let's go. So that catch is pretty huge. So he definitely has some sort of upside somewhere.
Yeah. And he's always been a good playoff performer, like in 2017 and 2018, like, and 2016 for that matter, like, even though that was a short series, like, he had great runs in the playoffs. So, I mean, I still see something that they can get out of him in. I don't think he's going to be as great as everybody thought he was going to be when he came up, but I still think he could be like a borderline all-star player by the end of his career.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Just so you know, as of right now, September 20th at 11:02, the Rangers officially have a worse record than the Red Sox. And they're 18-34, and the Red Sox are 19-34. Again, the Red Sox play the Yankees later today. So right now, in terms of tanking for that number two spot, they are one spot too high.
Not only that, Arizona's right on their tail. It's very interesting.
Yeah, so there's a lot going on there. So just so you know that – oh, and the Nationals, which is actually, like, pretty interesting considering – you know, I still think the Nationals have a good team.
Are you seeing their record right now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're not
– Well, I mean, through 50 games, they're 19-31. Does that sound familiar?
Oh, right, that's true. That's what the last year is similar to that.
World Series champions on deck.
You know, I always think about, because we're in such a shortened season, it's only 60 games, how many teams would, you know, like, if we had the rest of the season going, how many teams would end up doing fantastic or, you know, turning their season around, or how many teams would end up actually crashing? You know, you look at a team like, I think, like the Angels, right? I mean, they're not a great team, but 23-30, and they look like they're going to finished near 500, probably not at or above 60 games in. If they had a full 162 game season, do you think they'd be competitive in the AL West?
I would say even like the Yankees are a team that got injured, that got hurt by the shortened season. Cause like they went through like a, what, 10, 15 game stretch where they weren't that great. And it kind of like killed their divisional hopes. But like now they've gone on this run and it's a little bit of too little too late, but like normally they'd have 110 games to make up like the 3.5 that they're back now.
Yeah. No, it's so true. And you know, you look at it and you also think of how much the Rays could have maybe been affected by it negatively. You know, we're only a game and a half or 3.5 games behind the Rays. And like you said, that could have been something that could be made up in 162 games. So it's really weird. And I think that a lot of teams aren't either are showing that it seems like they're better than they would be, but it's 60 games, so it's hard to say that they're actually that good. And then teams look like they're being really bad, but they actually might, you know, have an upside if it were 162 games. It's just a weird season all around. Definitely feeling that. Have you been keeping up with the postseason? Kind of how the rankings going? I know that the Red Sox are kind of out of it, but it's really interesting, like coming down to the wire, looking at that.
Well, like, I feel like the American League is kind of set, but I feel like the National League is, like, a massive dogfight.
Yeah. I think the National League is the entertainment that Manfred wanted.
Yeah.
Like, this is what he was hoping would happen in the American League, and it's not happening, obviously.
Because, like, I just have the standings in front of me right now. The Reds have, like, kind of, like, risen from the dead. Since, like, at the trade deadline, they weren't selling their players, and everybody was like, what are you doing? Like, you're one of the worst teams in the league. And now they've kind of risen from the dead. And they're currently the 8th seed, but like right behind them are Milwaukee, San Fran. Like even the Mets, I think, are like probably like a game and a half, 2 games out. With like 10 games to go, like this is going to be wild. I feel like there's going to be a lot of shifting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, even a really close race is the Reds, Cardinals, Brewers, and Mets, like for that NL spot that you're talking about. And this upcoming week, the Reds play the Brewers. And then the Cards play the hold on, I had it up real quick. I think the
Brewers again later in the week.
Yeah, right? Brewers again. So the Brewers have an important 2 back-to-back series coming up, and they cannot lose both of these series.
Not at all.
Yeah, I mean it's interesting to think about. I know for me as a Yankee fan, I was really worried going to that Toronto series because you know Toronto had that second spot in the American League East, and we were on the fringe there. It was the vibes in Yankee land were horrendous. Like the vibes were really bad. And just having them turn it around, winning 10 straight is huge. And, I what is your opinion on streaks like this? Cause I think that I see 10 game winning streak and I'm like, great, 10 game winning streak a week or so left into the playoffs. Could this, you know, even if they end up losing a couple games here and there, could this just streak lead them into the postseason, just have them go, you know, crazy fast into it?
I feel like there's going to be, you know, like there's those people out there that are like, oh, water's always going to find its level. If you peak too early, all of a sudden the playoffs are going to hit and you're going to stink. And it's like, I don't really subscribe to that. Like, I kind of feel like the regular season is the regular season, but like what you did leading up to that, I feel like doesn't really matter. Like, I feel like the, you know, last year, obviously, it goes directly against what I'm saying because, like, the Nationals were, like, on fire from, like, June on. But, like, in general, I feel like the best team is always going to win. Like, you know, the best team with the best players is always going to win. And I feel like the Yankees are one of those teams anyways. So, like, even if they got in, I would always consider them dangerous. Like, if they were the 8 seed for a while, I doubt the Rays would pick them to face in the first round because it's just, like, you don't want to face the Yankees in the first round. That's not,
yeah,
you know, absolutely. This Yankee team. Better than they were. This Yankee team is arguably better than the 4 seed they are right now. So
I think so too. And I think that also in a, maybe not a regular year, but you know, it stinks that they can't move up in the standings until they overcome the Rays.
Yeah.
So even if, cause they're close to having a better record than the A's and they can't overcome them because the Rays are the first seed. It's all the division leaders first. And then the second place teams and then the wild card teams. So it kind of stinks in that regard because I really do think that we could end up being like a 3 seed, maybe even a 2 seed in like a perfect world, which is kind of like how the NBA works, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it used to work that way. It used to work like if you won your division, you were guaranteed a top four seed. I think now you're just guaranteed a playoff spot.
In the NBA?
Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, that's – see, that would be, I think, something that they could have done for this year.
Yeah.
Where, like, maybe the division leaders get a playoff spot, like you said, but not necessarily in that seed order.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just – it again, this is 2020 baseball that we're talking about. This isn't real baseball.
It's not a perfect – yeah. I mean, I feel like, though, with this playoff system – I have to be honest. Like, I wasn't a fan of the playoff system at first. But looking back on it, like, this is actually the correct decision because you can't say, like, oh, we were screwed by the shortened season because, like, if you don't make the playoffs, like, none of the teams that are out of the playoff field right now have a record above 500. So it's like there's really no complaints that you can have about not making the playoffs this year. It's like that's kind of your own fault.
That's true. That's true. I guess I just wasn't – I didn't really love the idea of that, you know, so many teams were making it. And it was kind of worrisome at first. I mean, for a while there, I was like, oh, gosh, thank God so many teams are making it because we wouldn't be in it if there weren't any teams. But now, you know, I'm always kind of worried about how that's going to look in the postseason, having to play more games, like stretching out these players. But again, I guess like you're saying, we're looking at 60 games. So this is almost as if the season were to be a regular 162 games.
I remember when this format came out and I was like, wow, this really helps teams like the Red Sox and the White Sox. And boy, was I ever so wrong because those two teams did not need this extended playoff field to do what they have done.
No, they did not. The Red Sox got nothing from it and the White Sox are great. I mean, the White Sox, that's a crazy, crazy team right there. I'm going to be completely honest. I know they retooled and got a lot of players this offseason. Did not think it was going to make a difference. I thought
it was next year for them. Like I, yeah. I thought it was next year and the year after that. I did not think this year. I'm so happy to be wrong because they're so much fun to watch.
Oh yeah, absolutely. But you know, I look at Dallas Keuchel. I didn't think Dallas Keuchel was a game changer. And I thought he was a third, like middle of the rotation type guy, who you know has those games that are pretty great. But in general, low velo. You know, not gonna. He might give you length, but it's not gonna be perfect. It's not gonna be like a Cole start or DeGrom start, but he's looking pretty good.
Yeah, Dallas Keuchel of old.
Yeah, and I'm kind of shocked by it. And then also like you got the Bomba Squad, and I thought the Twins were going to take that division easily. You know, I thought their offense was just nuts. So I thought
the Twins, maybe Cleveland because their rotation was so great. But like, I mean, like I didn't even like in the field for the White Sox. Like I didn't think that Tim Anderson and Jose Abreu were like difference making players that can give you a playoff run right now, but they're both arguably MVP candidates.
You know, I actually am interested about the MVP race now that you brought it up. Cause you mentioned Tim Anderson and Tim Anderson is someone that's definitely been mentioned in the MVP race. Who would you say are top three people right now for the AL MVP?
Well, I would say Trout, obviously. You have to put him there.
Yeah. It's Mike Trout.
What?
It's Mike Trout. You have to put it
right. Yeah. Right. Shane Bieber is definitely going to make a run on it. Because, I mean, and not only that, there's a case for him because if you look at Cleveland's offensive numbers, they have no offense. Everything relies on their pitching staff.
Mm.
So, like, I think they've scored, like, less than three runs in, like, 20-something games already. Like, almost half their games, they've scored less than three runs. They're abysmal offensively. So, the fact that they're in this position is because of their pitchers. So, I feel like Bieber definitely deserves some votes.
Absolutely. And third,
it's like a dogfight. Like, I know I feel like a guy, I mean, again, people are going to call me a Yankee. You're like a Red Sox apologist in this episode or whatever. But, like, how is DJ LeMahieu not in this conversation?
That's what I was going to say the same thing. You know, I think with the Yankees and, you know, maybe, again, I might be a Yankee apologist. But I think that so often you get these great players come through in the Yankees who have fantastic seasons. But because of the Yankees, people feel as though it's almost like their impact is almost negligible. You know, you look at Mike Trout, he's on the Angels, where, except for this year where they have Ohtani and Rendon, but before that, they have literally no one. And it's just him alone on a team. It's like LeBron in Cleveland. And you don't really have, you know, you have to look at this player and be like, you feel so bad for him that it's almost like you want to give him your MVP votes. But you have someone like DJ LeMahieu, who, you know, he's having a normal DJ LeMahieu type season, you know, high average, high on base percentage. Adding in slugging since he's been in New York, which has been really impactful. And he's doing it, you know, consistently night in, night out. And I think that people want to turn a blind eye to that because he's a Yankee. But for me, at least, I think he's number one on my MVP ranking. And I'm putting Bieber second, and I'm putting Rendon third.
Rendon really over Trout?
Why's yeah. That? The reason I think so, I think, you know, they're both having great seasons. Obviously, they're both phenomenal players. And Mike Trout's probably four or five for me. But defensively, I think Mike Trout, and again, it's a shortened season, but he's not having the best defensive year. I forgot what it was, but I was looking at his Fangraphs. I think that he had his defensive rating this year was a little bit down from what it was. And so, I don't know, when I look at, you know, MVP, I kind of take defense into it as well. I think it's kind of important to put them both into it. So that's the only reason. But again, he's still having a fantastic season, so it's kind of hard for me not to put him in there. But DJ LeMahieu is definitely the guy. I think for me, he's my MVP.
Interesting. What about a guy from the Rays like Lau? Do you like put any stock into him too? Like, do you think he'll get a couple of votes?
Absolutely. I think like 30 games in, he was for me number one.
Yeah.
He was having he's still having a really good season, but at that point, he was just like, and that was when everyone was struggling, you know, like, I think DJ had broken his hand, or not, whatever happened to his hand on that swing. Trout was still finding his stroke. Everyone was kind of just figuring it out still, and I was doing it consistently, and the Rays were doing well. So I thought he was my MVP number one at that point.
I think the interesting thing about the AL MVP race this season is it's kind of like a changing of the guard in some ways, because we're used to like the Trouts and the Altuves and the Betts being up there, but like this year it's a bunch of new guys that we haven't really seen there before. Like, when the heck has anybody talked about like Jose Abreu, Tim Anderson, Shane Bieber, DJ LeMahieu in an MVP conversation? Like, none of these guys are necessarily young guys per se, but like, when have they ever been involved in the MVP? And like, all the classic names we're seeing, like Altuve, Betts, they're not in the discussion for a variety of reasons, but
Betts is in discussion in the NL.
What's that?
Betts is in the discussion for the NL.
Right, but I'm talking about like just firmly the American League. Like, it's weird. Like,
yeah,
all these guys that we've been talking about probably for the last 5 years, like all of them except for Trout kind of exited stage right, like at the exact same time.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's weird that people have been, you've been definitely seen people struggle, and maybe if it was a full season, they would have gotten their stroke back. A great example of this is Cody Bellinger. You know, the guy is not really injured. I mean, maybe he has something going on that he's not talking about, but there's nothing really that he should be struggling so hard with. I could understand maybe Altuve struggling because the Astros just had probably one of the worst off seasons of all time. And morale there is incredibly low, but I don't understand like Bellinger struggling or when Yelich was struggling. You know, I didn't really understand where that was coming from, because I think that they're obviously both great hitters. So that was kind of weird for me. I didn't really understand where that came from.
Yeah, I mean, another guy that I feel like who's struggling that, given a full season, might be able to find their stroke is J.J. Martinez. Like,
yeah,
been abysmal this year, but I feel like if it was a full season, 100 games left, he might be able to find it. I mean, it's definitely easy to figure things out. I mean, through 30 games, for example, like Rafael Devers from the Red Sox was awful, but now over the last 30 games, it's to the point where, like, if you take the entire season into perspective, it's been his best offensive output of his career. So yeah, it's easy to switch it around, but it's also tough on some guys. Like, 60 games, all of a sudden you're looking up at 20 and you're like, I'm not hitting well, and we're already a third of the way through the season. Like, it weighs on you a little bit. So.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think that just in everything going on is definitely weighing on them. I have to believe that even probably some of them have some sort of COVID anxiety going on there.
Sure.
Yeah,
it's a different year. Nothing's the same. It messes with you mentally.
Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to see how, you know, 2021, if everything gets back on track and then life resumes as normal, you know, seeing these guys come out again and seeing what they're doing, whether they feel kind of more amped up because they feel like they lost something last season, or if they're, you know, if they just are back to normal. That's going to be pretty exciting.
Before we get away from this conversation, National League MVP, who do you have?
National League MVP. That is interesting. I want to say Betts, and maybe I'm biased because I've also been a huge Betts fan. I know I shouldn't say that as a Yankee fan, but I've always been a huge Betts guy. But Tatis is really entertaining. I mean, you can't deny that. But I saw a take the other day that said actually Manny Machado is having a better season than –
God damn it, I was going to say that.
You're going to say that? Manny Machado is having a better season than Tatis. And Tatis is super entertaining and is having a good season. Like, we're not going to at all.
And Manny Machado is the most hateable guy out there, but.
Yeah, yeah. We're not going to go back.
Numbers never lie.
Yeah, no, he's having a fantastic season. And it's getting overshadowed because people hate him. And Tatis is like this young, energetic guy. But he's having a really good season. And I still think he's their best player. So I'm going to put him, I'm going to put him up there for the NL MVP too.
Yeah, and then one guy too that everybody's kind of overlooking, or not overlooking per se, but that's not getting talked about because his team stinks, is like Juan Soto's been tearing the cover off the ball for the entirety of the season. And I just wonder, like, if he hadn't missed those first 10 days because of that false positive, like, he probably could have won the MVP, like, very
easily. Are we talking about the 21-year-old stud?
Yes, Juan Soto.
Juan Soto. He's 21, right? Did I get his age wrong?
I mean, 21. Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay.
He's young.
Yeah, no, he is a stud. Stud and a half. Yeah, I think so, too. That's a good one. I might have to change it. I probably might put him instead of Tatis.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and then my ballot would probably have been Betts, Soto, Machado, actually, to be quite honest. I mean, sure, Freddie Freeman probably deserves some votes, too, but – I mean, like, when you talk about the three stories of the year in the National League, it has – or the two biggest stories have been the dominance of the Dodgers, like, and Mookie has been their best player all season,
yep,
and the upcoming of the Padres. And I get Tatis has kind of been the face of the Padres all year because they were a young, energetic team led by a young, energetic player. But again, like you said, I feel like Manny Machado has been their best player this year.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I think he – him and Harper are – I mean, not that they had bad seasons last year, but, you know, they got these massive contracts, like 10-year, $300 million. People were like, I don't know if these people, like, if they deserve this. They're only, you know, role player – or not role players, position players. And they're 26, and you're going to have them till they're 36. And honestly, I don't think they had bad seasons last year, but I also don't think that – I think that this year they're 100% living up to how much they're being paid. I mean, if you look at Bryce Harper, too, Bryce Harper has hit – and Philly's history, the top five hardest home runs. The top five hardest home runs in Philly's history are all Bryce Harper. Like, that's just nuts. You know, he's been here for a year and a half.
He's too good to have had the season he had last year forever. Like, people will point on his 2018 year and be like, see, like, he didn't deserve that contract. But if you paid attention, like, his second half of the year was awesome. Last year, he didn't have a bad year, but he didn't have a great year either. But, like, he's just too good to – keep producing like he did the last 2 years. Like, eventually he was going to wake up, and this year he did wake up.
That's an interesting phrase that you said, too good to like keep playing like that. And often you hear that a lot when players are struggling. Like, you hear that especially with Cody Bellinger this year and JD Martinez, obviously. And one thing you hear that about is like in the Yankees with Gary Sanchez, right? They hear that Gary Sanchez is too good to be doing this constantly. I am a Yankee fan, obviously. Gary Sanchez, to me, I'm going to give my full honest opinion on Gary Sanchez. I think Gary Sanchez is an elite-level talent. I think he's a great catcher. I think he has the potential to be a top-five catcher in the league, probably even top three. He's shown he can do it. He has the pop. The problem is that he's just not playing well. And as a Yankee fan, it's frustrating not to see the results. It is frustrating for any fan not to see the results. But if you dive deeper beyond the you know, he went 0 for 4 and dive into what that 0 for 4 was, you know, you see at bat one, he smoked a ball 112 miles an hour with an XBA of like 850 right at the shortstop. You know, and so when you hear the 0 for 4, it's frustrating. But then when you look at the game, you're like, he's just hitting into bad luck. So for someone like Gary Sanchez, how long do you think that bad luck just continues? And like when he snaps out of it, is it like he snaps out of it and he's just on fire? Because he's heating up right now, definitely. Things are falling for him. You know, home runs are going over the wall. But definitely, and you hear it on the broadcast, Michael Kay's always like, oh, well, he's still hitting 172 or whatever, like 164. And you're like, all right, well, batting averages and everything, obviously. So I don't know. What is your thought on that? How do you think that's going to
– Well, like for Gary, it's like – we use that phrase a lot, and his power is impressive, but, like, is that all we're going to limit him to at this point? Like, he's just, like, because over the last couple of years, like, the power has been there, but literally nothing else has. Like, is he just, I guess, have we reserved, like, I'm not, you know, and I'm not Mr. Anti-Analytics guy, but like, you know, the actual, the expected numbers, like, I know there's value to be put into it, but there's also like, you know, he hits the ball really hard. He hits for a lot of power. Is he just like Joey Gallo who plays catcher?
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. For anyone who doesn't get that reference, Joey Gallo obviously has a lot of pop and is a great offensive talent, but it's kind of just homer or nothing. You know?
Yeah, right. All or nothing.
And that's an interesting point. And I think that here's actually where I like analytics. So maybe it's because I like Gary Sanchez so much, and I really hope that he could turn it around because I always want him to be our catcher of the future. I think when you look at like what makes an at-bat or a hit so valuable, there are certain elements to it, right? So barreling up the ball is always something that they talk about. You'll get a higher quality of contact if you barrel up the ball. Someone like Miguel Andujar doesn't really barrel up the ball that well. A lot of his hits are bloop singles or bloop doubles that shouldn't fall, have an XBF like 150 and are hit 78 miles an hour, but they do. And so that over time isn't going to, you know, when you play like a great defensive team, those bloop singles are going to get caught. Those bloop doubles are going to get caught. So when you look at someone who barrels up the ball every time, like Gary Sanchez does, I think his barrel percentage is somewhere around 20%. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's what it was. He's hitting it with high quality, and he's hitting it hard, you know, 112 miles an hour, 100 miles an hour, 110 miles an hour. And the spots where you know, he's getting caught is, just, yeah, some great defense, but eventually those spots are going to, you know, it's going to land. You hit a ball hard and you hit a ball far, eventually those are going to fall. That's just like, that's the name of baseball. That's how you hit balls. You're supposed to hit hard, you're supposed to hit it far. So that's where I actually like the analytics. And that's where, you know, I've been getting more into analytics this year. I'm not an analytics pro, but I think that's something for me that I'm always looking at. I'm like, eventually this is going to happen. And, you know, if it happens in the postseason, that's great. That's perfect timing for that to happen, but eventually it will. And that's what I'm kind of looking forward to.
But like when I look at his numbers, like over the last four seasons, right? So 2016, he tore the cover off the ball that last part of the year, right? But yeah. 2017, his first full year, he had an 876 OPS. Good. Pretty good. Especially out of a catcher. Going to take that every day. His 2018, he had a 697 OPS and had a on-base percentage under 300. 2019, he responded 841 OPS, and then this year he has a 662 OPS with an on-base percentage of 258.
Well, I'm going to take the 2018 in more context because he was injured like basically the whole year. So he was dealing with groin stuff. He was on, I think he had two IL stints that year. So in terms of 2018, I'm going to put that one into context a little bit more. But
he played 106 games last year. He played 122 games in 2017. He played 89 in 2018. Like, for catchers, like, it's not like they're going to play all 162 either.
Yeah, no. And he – you see that a lot with Boone, Aaron Boone of the Yankees. He loves to give Gary off. I mean, he gave Gary off last night, for instance, even though he had a great game on Friday.
He's a catcher. You got to save him.
Yeah, you got to sit him every like, once a series, basically, or DH him once a series. Just get him off his legs. But 2018, I mean, he was playing a lot there too. And, you know, his groin just was not cooperating with him that season. And 2017, 2019, he might have had some injuries. I mean, it was a horrible year in general for the Yankees, but, there were some moments where he showed flashes of what he could be. And I know he cooled off a little bit at the end of the year, but, I still think Gary Sanchez has it. And I think I'm hoping that, you know, given a full year next year, that this is going to be something that he could continue to do. But again, the question then raises, you know, as arbitrations come in for him and someone like Aaron Judge too, who has a, I got to say, an injury history officially, where do the Yankees consider spending money when someone like Gleyber Torres is going to eventually need money too, or you're paying Giancarlo Stanton's contract?
Well, I was going to say too, I mean, Gary, that's what I was going to say, like, contract time is coming soon. He is 27. He's going to be 28 next year. I mean, he's in his prime for a baseball player, especially considering when you're a catcher, the first thing that goes is always the hitting.
Yep.
And he's a catcher who is known not so much for his defense. I mean, his defense has gotten better, but Gary Sanchez, the most valuable part of Gary Sanchez is, I mean, sure, his game calling, but also his bat. And like, when you consider everything in it, in that you have contract questions coming up with Judge and Glaber and Severino even eventually. And
it's true.
And yep. You have to pay Gerrit Cole and you have to pay Giancarlo Stanton. And you're probably going to end up paying Gleyber Torres. And I'm assuming they're going to throw another free agent in there at some point too, right? Like, you're the New York Yankees. You're always
in the Mayhews in free agency this year.
Like, Gary Sanchez eventually. I feel like when you go down the list of priorities, especially considering that you've already paid Stanton a tremendous amount of money, you're already paying Cole a tremendous amount of money. Now you got Judge, Torres, Sanchez, like all these guys. Like, I feel like Gary Sanchez is the odd man out there. No, maybe I'm wrong.
I'd say, we're looking at Glaber, Gary, Judge, Sevy. We'd say that those four are kind of the main tools. Judge is going to get some sort of payment, right? I mean, he has to. He's just the face of the Yankees. Even given his history, you kind of just – and he's a top player in the league. I mean, when he's healthy, it's just ridiculous. Sevy is a great pitcher and definitely I still think has Cy Young potential. I know it sounds like a big ask, but I think he has Cy Young potential. So that one's probably have to agree with that.
Even with the injury history though?
And he's pitched
two seasons.
With the injury history?
Yeah, I mean, he pitched the playoffs last year, but other than that, 2019, 2020, he hasn't been there.
I mean,
and plus his playoff history too. He's got bad postseason numbers.
I mean, okay, I'm not even going to – because postseason numbers for me at least, I don't really count them in terms of how – I mean, Clayton Kershaw, right? I think people too often have – Clayton Kershaw is one of my favorite players of all time. He is an all-time great. Like, that guy is a Hall of Famer today. If he retired this second, he would be in the Hall of Fame. Probably – and obviously not next year, but the first year he's eligible to be in the Hall of Fame. First ballot. He's one of the best pitchers of all time. Right, like he's up there with Sandy Koufax type good, but people constantly like, oh, he crashed in the playoffs every year. But does that take away from like how good he is?
I think like guys like Clayton Kershaw, David Price for a time, like when you look back on their career, it was like, yeah, but because like winning matters too. Like Clayton Kershaw has been on a good team his entire career, but the criticism of the Dodgers over the last 10 years has been once the calendar flips to October, like they don't do anything.
Yeah, but I think of it in like, you know, we always talk about sample sizes in baseball, right? And we talked about a lot this episode about 60 game season and how this season isn't really indicative of how well players are doing or how poorly they're doing because it's only 60 games. But if you get, you know, you have someone like Clayton Kershaw. And he's going to be in the postseason. The postseason is obviously a very small amount of time, right? It's only like, you know, what, 16 or so games if you sweep. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. But can that take away from 162 games of just excellence?
Well, I think when you, again, though, like guys that have been, that are looked at as all-time greats, Derek, like, for example, like over the last 20 years, Yankees and Red Sox, but two best players, Derek Jeter and David Ortiz. Okay. Why?
Well, obviously, yes.
It's like when you remember David Ortiz and Derek Jeter, you remember the high stake moments, right? I mean, Derek Jeter, 5-time champion. David Ortiz, 3-time champion, one of the most clutch players in history. Both can go down as like it's big. It's resume makers.
Yeah, I mean, they are resume makers, and don't get me wrong. I think winning in the postseason does nothing but add on to your resume. Like it obviously never negative. But it's hard for me to think it takes away, especially in baseball. You know, in basketball, maybe I can understand a little bit more. You know, if you're someone like LeBron James, who's never – if he had never won a ring, let's say right now he's in year 17, never won a ring, that's something that you can talk about because it's like you never put yourself in a position where you can win. Like, you can't carry a team. You know, that differentiates the really good players from the great players where they can carry teams, right? I think in baseball, it's hard to carry a team. And even if, yes, you know, Kershaw – could play better in the postseason. I still look at it as, you know, it's four starts. And imagine you have an entire season. How many times do players pitch an entire season? Let's say like 30, right? Let's say a player pitches 30 times in a regular season. If a player has four bad starts, right? Four starts, maybe he goes 5 innings, 4 runs plus. But the other, you know, 26 starts is just 7 innings, 2 runs, you know, 8 innings, 1 run, shutout game, stuff like that. Do the 4 runs take away from the other 26?
Okay, but I look back on that and I actually use that point to make my point. It's like you get four starts in October, right? But those starts are so much more important because when you look back on a playoff series, if you lose game one and game five because Clayton Kershaw gets shelled, like now you have to go 4-1 the rest of the series. Like you're almost having to play because of Clayton. Like, and again, like I think it's a resume where it's like regular season, you're going to take like anybody over Clayton Kershaw. It's like, no, I'm going to take Clayton Kershaw for the regular season. But like game seven of the World Series, you're going to take Clayton Kershaw. You're going to take like in their prime, you're going to take Clayton Kershaw. You're going to take Madison Bumgarner. I think the answer is very easy.
Okay. I see what you're saying there. I guess do you think this diminishes his Hall of Fame resume?
He's a Hall of Famer without a doubt. Like the greatest pitcher of his generation, like over the last decade, he's been the best pitcher in baseball. But I think, you know, and with David Price until he won a World Series, I think there was this too, where it was like, but, you know, once the calendar flipped, he.
Well, do you think David Price is a Hall of Famer?
No.
Oh, okay.
But the knock on Price, because like Price was also one of the better pitchers over the last decade.
Okay.
And especially when he came into Boston, when they gave him that $30 million a year contract, like don't think like the first thought on everybody's head was the Red Sox play for championships. Why'd you bring in David Price?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, that's a good point. And it's interesting because I really, pitching is so difficult to analyze. And even when we talked about Bieber earlier, and about how, you know, he's kind of in the MVP discussion. Like, he just can't not be. But a huge knock on Bieber being in the MVP conversation from people is that he only pitches
once every 5 days. Once
every 5 games, yeah. So how impactful can that be? And for me, I think that if you're in the MVP discussion as a pitcher, that means you were really phenomenal, right? Like, DeGrom should have been in the – I think he was, but he definitely should have been in the MVP conversation the past 3 years.
He finished runner-up, yeah.
Yeah, like you can't not have him because the guy is on the Mets. You know, he can have literally a 9-inning, 1-run game and lose. Like, that's unheard of to have 9 innings, 1 run, you know, 15 strikeouts and lose the game. You give up one home run and that's it. I remember I was at Yankee State or City Field, and the Yankees were there, and it was against DeGrom, and obviously they were struggling scoring. And I forgot who was pitching for us, but it was a pretty good pitching matchup. And then someone launched one over, you know, and it was a 1-run game. And I was like, great, we won. Like, game's over. I was like, we don't even have to score for the rest of this game. The Mets are not scoring, and we're not going to score again because it's DeGrom. So we're going to end up losing. And that's essentially what happened. And it's, you know, you feel for the guy because that's pretty tough.
And that's
going to be really impactful.
I remember, and this is a long time ago, it was like the year they made the World Series run, and it was like kind of like DeGrom's breakout year.
Yeah.
And I went to a Red Sox-Mets game at Citi Field, and the Red Sox were not good. It was like the Pablo Sandoval, Hanley Ramirez era. It was bad.
Yeah.
And we went to Citi Field, and it was Jacob DeGrom facing off against Joe Kelly.
Oh, man.
And Mookie Betts homered. And Pablo Sandoval drove in a couple of runs with a double, and the Red Sox won the game, I think, 3-1. DeGrom pitched like 7 innings, gave up 3 runs, which, you know, isn't great for him, but like you should win.
For normal pitchers, that's an incredible game. They'll go home sleeping so well.
And off of Joe Kelly, the Mets mustered 1 run.
It's painful, and you feel for the guy. Like if he were across town in New York and the Yankees, like the guy would probably win every single start. He'd probably be undefeated.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Any other team, like, game for your life, like, you're picking Jake DeGrom.
Yeah, absolutely. He's the best pitcher in baseball right now.
Yeah.
He's been for the past 3 years.
At least, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's you hate to see someone like that. And that's why I think that, honestly, you know, he's obviously won the Cy Young. What is it, 2 years in a row? Yeah, this would be
his. Yeah, he could win a third.
Yeah, he had a rough start, though. This last outing.
Yeah, I think he got hurt though, right?
He might have gotten hurt. I don't know if he got hurt, but I just remember that, you know, he had a pretty rough outing, and Mets fans were going a little nuts because
I've seen like Jake DeGrom updates on my feed the other day, like, oh, he played catch today, you know.
Oh, okay. So he might have gotten injured. But you know, it's tough when you have such a great pitcher but just no sort of offense. Speaking of great pitchers though, Verlander. Verlander just announced, he's obviously missed, you know, the entire 2020 season, but he just announced getting Tommy John surgery.
He's done for 2021.
That puts him out for next year, unless, you know, there's a miracle and he pulls an Aaron Hicks and then comes back. But how do we think that, because, you know, is Justin Verlander done? Is this the last of Justin Verlander?
I just looked it up. He will be 39 years old by the time he comes back in 2022. He's done.
He's done, yeah. I mean, he has to be, right? And you feel, because we're talking about Clayton Kershaw as a Hall of Fame pitcher, and DeGrom, obviously, who's most likely going to be a Hall of Fame pitcher. Verlander is also a Hall of Famer today.
Yeah. He's in the conversation with Kershaw as, like, best pitcher of the last decade.
Yeah, exactly. Scherzer's probably in that conversation somewhere there.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're getting ready. I think we're ready for that movement for all these great players to start retiring. You know, we knew Verlander retirement was going to come soon. Scherzer retirement was going to come soon. Kershaw, not like soon, but, you know, within the probably not the next 10 years, but somewhere in between there. And just to see something like this happen so suddenly, you know, you're hoping that at least you'd see maybe one more flash of greatness from him, just from a baseball perspective, just watching him do his thing once more, even if it is for the Astros. You were hoping to see that, and now it seems like, you know, we're not going to – that's it.
Plus, not only that, too, like, I always kind of thought, like, you know, like, for example, Roger Clemens, what was – I mean, I know he was roided up when he was doing it, but he was winning Cy Youngs when he was in his 40s.
Yeah.
Like, he was, you know – among the best pitchers in baseball still, even in his 40s. I thought, like, not that Verlander is Roger Clemens and would be in his 40s still being the best pitcher in baseball, but I thought, I mean, obviously we did have more time before he hit a decline because he just won Cy Young, but...
Doesn't think he deserved it, though, but that's for another discussion.
But, I mean, I just don't see how you, as a 37-year-old who relies majority, like, not majority in fastball, but you've always been a velocity-based pitcher.
Mm-hmm.
And now you have Tommy John surgery at age 37. So you're going to miss 2019 and 2020 and then try to come back. I'm sorry, you're going to miss 2020 and 2021. You're going to come back in 2022 at 39 years old, like with a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. I just find it – I'm not a doctor, but I find it hard to believe.
Yeah, no, I don't think that velo is going to be anywhere close to what it was. I mean, he might – again, he might pull a J-Hap, though, and be pumping 92 with movement.
Yeah, but does Justin Verlander want to be J-Hap with like, a 4.5 ERA?
Well, to be fair, Hap did just annihilate the Red Sox last night.
Yeah, congratulations. You know, him and, like, you know, children.
Yeah.
That Red Sox team. I mean, I'm pretty sure there's probably a kid playing his Little League game down the street that you could pull that would go 6 2/3, give up a
against
couple
the Red Sox. I mean, possibly, but
you can dot up way win.
I think we've seen pitchers adapt, and don't get me wrong, I don't know if Verlander is going to want to even come back, but I think that he's a competitive fire in him where I wouldn't be surprised if he did say, you know, I want to do one more year. I don't want to go out like that. I want to, you know, give my all one more time. And we've seen pitchers adapt. We've seen them have to adjust how they pitch. CC Sabathia, you know, kind of did that. You know, you can't get the fastball a lot, so you got to start relying on something else like a slider or you know, some other sort of secondary pitch as your main, like, get him out type pitch. So we've seen pitchers adapt. And I don't know, the Houston Astros organization, like, yes, we can get into the discussion of them being cheaters and stuff like that. But we've seen over the past couple of years how they develop pitchers really well. I mean, Gerrit Cole has always been a good pitcher, but he wasn't great until he went to Houston. You know, they found something in terms of, you know, his fastball movement, how it lives and how it jumps and stuff like that, and adjusted to that. So, you know, could they do something like that with Verlander? I don't know. Maybe it's, you know, give it one last year and just, you know, maybe he doesn't win a Cy Young, obviously, but he has a, you know, good season where he can be a fifth starter for the Astros and be reliable enough to bring them into the postseason. And maybe he doesn't pitch the postseason, but he gets them there.
Yeah, maybe. I just, I look at like what these major injuries can do, and like you've seen over the last decade, I think probably the most famous example, this, it wasn't Tommy John, but Tommy John definitely contributed to it, was like even the guy like Matt Harvey, like major surgeries, you know, they have their way, and he's been dealing with an injury for the last year essentially, and now he's got Tommy John surgery that's going to keep him out another year. So by the time 2022 comes back, he's 2 years removed. Sometimes with Tommy John too, it takes a year for you to get your form back, you know? Like, yeah. There's some guys that come back from Tommy John, and the first year they're not great, but then the second year they kick in. And those guys are the lucky ones that are able to, you know, return to form after such a major surgery. I don't know.
You know, it's definitely something interesting to, and you got to feel.
It sucks.
Yeah, you got to feel for him. And the Houston organization is just in a very weird situation right now.
Do you think this is the beginning of the end?
For the Astros?
Yeah.
That's a good question. You know, I think that it's a transitional period. I don't know if it's the end, but it is a transitional period. You're seeing that this year with
like just 26 and 26.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's a shortened season, but there's just a lot of, I mean, I think that if there were fans in the stadiums right now, it'd be worse, right? Every away ballpark would be a nightmare.
Yeah.
It's just an absolute nightmare. And they talk about this all the time. They talk about this when they go to Yankee Stadium, how it feels getting harassed by the fans in the bleachers and stuff. But given a full season going on the way, that would be horrendous. And I think that there's definitely something going on this year, just morale-wise. And then looking for the futures organizationally, you know, they've got some payment concerns themselves. We're talking about the Yankees payment concerns, but they've got some also. You know, because they got Correa, Altuve, Bregman, Springer. You know, they're
gone after this year, I think.
Yeah, they essentially with the Yankees, we're talking about the main four of them. That's the Astros core right there. Those are their four players.
And I think Springer's gone because, like, I'm not – if I'm the Astros, he's going to be 31 next year. I'm not handing him a 6 or 7 year deal. I'll let somebody else do that.
Yeah, and I think that Springer's a good player, obviously. I think he's a great player. Is he the main cog of your team? Because I think if you look at your team and who you'd want to keep, not that he's not good, obviously, but I don't think he's as valuable to what you need as a team as Correa is and Bregman is and Altuve is.
Most valuable member on the Red Sox, the Astros right now is not George. It's Bregman.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Definitely not George Springer. I mean, but when you think about that Astros core – over the last few years, I mean, they didn't win a World Series with him, but like it's Gerrit Cole, gone. Justin Verlander, gone for a while.
Yeah.
Mitch Springer, likely gone, right?
Like, Zach Greinke.
I mean, the clock is ticking on his career too.
Yeah, Zach Greinke, yep.
He's getting up there. And I mean, Michael Brantley, like, is he a difference maker still? I mean.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah.
A lot of these guys, like, you know, three main pieces are going to be gone after this year. Like, Gerrit Cole has been gone. Justin Verlander will be gone for a while. And I have a feeling that George Springer will be playing somewhere else next year, too.
And then you got Jordan Alvarez to look at. You know, obviously the guy, Jordan Alvarez, obviously the guy is phenomenal and definitely has a huge career coming up. But this year, injury-wise, you know.
Not good.
Yeah, not good. And you hope that doesn't become a thing. Obviously, the Astros, your hope that that's not a thing that continues. But yeah, it's a question mark.
You never want to see a guy get hurt.
Yeah, you never want to see a player get hurt, especially one of his caliber. I mean, from just a baseball fan perspective, you don't want to miss out on seeing someone like Jordan Alvarez play. But, you know, he's done for the – like, he's done. He's got surgery on both of his knees. So – you know, what is that going to look like? And those are huge surgeries. I mean, it's not Tommy John, but it's big on both your knees. So you hope that doesn't continue to be a thing and hopefully his knees stay healthy. But when you look at the future, he was going to be a member of that. You know, it was going to be, you know, maybe get rid of Springer, but you replaced it with Jordan Alvarez. Will he be able to do that? I don't know. So those are, you know, interesting questions with the Astros. So last thing also before we kind of start wrapping up, playoff picture. We've got to return to this one more time. How do you think the playoffs are going to unravel? Like, why do you think it's going to look?
I think the American League, we stay the same as it is right now, which is like Rays, White Sox, A's winning their divisions, Yankees, Twins, Astros, 4-6, and then Cleveland and Toronto, 7-8. I think those eight teams get in. For the National League, I mean, I love the Reds, but I mean, I think of the three that are getting the three top teams right now, mm-hmm. excluding the Mets, the Reds, the Brewers, and the Giants, I feel like the Reds are the best.
The Reds, say it again?
The Reds, the Brewers, the Giants.
Okay,
Reds, Brewers, Giants. The Mets. I feel like the Reds are the best of that group.
Reds, Brewers, Giants. Yeah, you know, I want to say the Reds too, but I know I also feel like Milwaukee is I mean, currently they have a higher chance of getting to the playoffs. And I think the Brewers still are a better team than the Reds, just all like in general. So, I mean, I think the Reds currently look like they – if anyone's going to get in, it would be them. But I don't would say, like, don't count out the Brewers in terms of what they can do and what their team looks like.
I also look at the Reds and I see that pitching rotation with you know, Bauer and Gray and Castillo and all them. And I'm like, that's not a team that I want to run into, you know, because like true. Nationals last year, you have a few good starting pitchers. You are dangerous.
Oh yeah. All you need is three. All you really need is three. You
yep. get through
that. Yep. I mean, that's how they survived. They just had the three guys just going at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. The Reds could make some noise. Who are you seeing out of both divisions? So, like, World Series matchup, super early.
I like the Dodgers. And, like, not to be basic, but I feel like it's the Yankees. Like,
the Yankees?
I just think that the Yankees, I mean, they were always going to get in, but I just feel like when they're healthy and they're going to be healthy, I mean, they can't be beaten by anybody in the American League, like 4 out of 7 times. Maybe okay. maybe some of these teams get lucky in like that first round and you know, you steal a couple off of them. But, you know, 7-game series, I don't think there's anybody in the American League better. And then in the World Series, like I think the Dodgers could get them in the World Series. But I think in the American League, I don't think there's a team in there. I mean, Cleveland with their starting pitching is dangerous, but like I don't think they have the offense over a 7-game series to push them to the World Series.
I'm going to challenge you on this for the NL. How do you feel about the Braves?
I like the Braves, but I just feel like the Dodgers are better. Maybe I'm wrong. I know I just like went on a rant about how the Dodgers can't do anything in the playoffs and Clayton Kershaw stinks in October, but I can't overlook what's happening right now, and it's the Dodgers beating the crap out of everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I hear you, and I do agree. I just think the Braves are super underrated. I mean, maybe I'm also huge, but I'm biased because I've loved Freddie Freeman forever. I think they have a really strong team, and I think that it's like they have a window as well, and I think they're like currently still within that window to make some noise. And I could see them coming out of the NL. That's my sleeper pick for the NL.
I feel like the sleeper pick out of the NL for me is Cubs.
The Cubs. Okay, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Because I look at them and they have a nice lineup, and the rotation is dangerously underrated. Because Darvish, right? You got Darvish. I know he hasn't had a good year in a couple of years, but playoff wise, and again, maybe I'm being, you know, the Red Sox fan, whatever in me, but I feel like John Lester is still dangerous in the playoffs. Like I feel like two years ago, he was in the wild card game, and you know the playoffs are a different game, and all these other things. And I mean, Kyle Hendricks has been good. That's three right there. I mean, I don't know.
All you need is three. All you need is three.
All you need is to get hot. And the Cubs are experienced. They are experienced. That is
true. I mean, it's an underrated team, and they also have a window, and that window I think is closing as well, like sneakily. You know, with
I thought it was closed personally.
You thought it was closed?
I thought, like, as of last year, like, I was like, this team's not good.
I thought that after 2016, was it? Yeah, 16. I thought that they had, like, after that moment, I was like, oh, they've gotten, like, the next, you know, 5 years is theirs. You know, they're going to make some noise. They're going to win at least one more World Series in the next 5 years. And then it kind of, like, trailed off. And I got nervous. I got nervous, especially last year. I was like, maybe I was incorrect. But I don't think that they're done. I think that they have, like, maybe this year, maybe one more. It's closing very quickly, but they're on their way. They still
the one thing that concerns me about the Cubs, though, is that they started off the year 13-3, and they've been a 500 team since.
Yeah, I mean, again, and that's something for me that I think that I talked it up to a shortened season. I think that when you look at the team that they're playing, the team that they are, they're better than this. And I think they've given a full – I mean, I thought they were better than this last year, but I really do think that they're better than this. And if you give them a full season, they'll be able to come out of it.
And, like, I say sleeper team, and people could be like, oh, wow, you picked the NL Central team as, you know, the NL Central, the second-best team in the National League right now by record is your sleeper pick. Like, congratulations. But, like, I feel like they are a team that, like, everybody's kind of ignoring. Like,
yeah.
You talk about the Dodgers. You talk about the Padres. Like, you don't really talk much about the Cubs.
Yeah.
You know? Like, they're kind of, you know, like, I looked up one day at the beginning of the year. I was like, they're 13-3. Nobody's talking about them.
Yeah. I mean, no one really talks about the Cubs in general. And I think just given their history of the organization, you know, they're not a team that people want to talk about. And it was the same thing in 2016, I think, when, you know, they were like, no matter how well they might be doing, it's still the Cubs.
Right.
So that's I think that's a very interesting point. And I do think that given time, people will start to realize that they're actually a really good team. And hopefully this is the year where they – prove some people wrong, even if they don't make it to the World Series. Maybe they make up to the
final series, yeah.
Yeah, make it to the championship series, and they prove people that, you know, we still have something. So, yeah, I still think the Braves are slept on. The Marlins in the playoffs still makes me laugh.
I don't care. I don't care.
That's just hilarious to me.
They're the eighth best team out of eight.
Like, I can't believe we are currently.
They're the eighth best team out of eight.
Yeah, and we're living in a world in which the Marlins are making the playoffs. That's just nuts to me. Shout out to Derek Jeter.
Fleeced.
What?
Derek Jeter fleeced that Stanton trade when you think about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's so funny to me. People are still upset about that Giancarlo Stanton trade.
I mean, like, I thought Jeter was giving them for free. I mean, make the argument that the Marlins don't have to deal with Giancarlo Stanton anymore.
Yeah, but they don't even have Starling Castro on their team anymore.
Yeah.
And I think those minor leaguers, it's Jorge, I forgot his last name, Guzma, I think it was. And then I forget the other guy. I don't think they're on the team. Or maybe they're still in the minor leagues.
They have all this money now, though. They could go out and make some moves.
Yeah. I know. I think it's really funny how people are still mad about that in Yankee land, as if, you know, the Yankees aren't one of the most profitable franchises in the entire world. And, like, they didn't have to trade anyone. It's not like they had to trade Aaron Judge and Luis Severino for Giancarlo Stanton, who is an MVP caliber player. But out of the AL,
about Yankee fans being upset about that trade.
Right. You know, they still are. I mean, it's because of, like, the injury history and the fact that they're worried about the finance of where the Yankees are going to be in the next couple of years.
And your team being built around Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, who are turning out to be kind of the same exact player.
Yeah, but I mean, if you look at it, for me at least, I think we should be grateful that we're not in a, forgive me, situation with the Red Sox, where we just traded away a generational player because we couldn't afford him. You know what I mean?
It's not that they couldn't afford him. It's because they didn't want to afford him.
They didn't want to afford him, I should say.
That's what's frustrating about it. They didn't want to. They chose not to.
So, like, if between the two of them, I would rather have us paying for Giancarlo Stanton than trading away, you know, Aaron Judge and stuff, because they're like, you know, we don't want to shell out the cash. And he only makes our team better. But out of the AL, actually. So, yeah, I think the same thing with the Yankees, too. But maybe it's just the fact that I'm just so cautiously optimistic of officially saying, like, the Yankees can do it. The Yankees will do it. I actually think that the Oakland A's are going to make some noise, and I think that they're going to give the Yankees some trouble if they meet up, and I think that they have a very good chance. I still think the Yankees might make it out. I can't really see them losing to the Rays. I just can't see it. They might do it, but in my head, I will always just think of, like, the Rays as just the people that have a Tropicana field as their home field.
That's the difference, though. The Rays are used to playing empty playoff games in empty playoff stadiums.
That's true.
They're used to the Bronx bumping, but the Rays, they don't care. They know how it feels playing an empty stadium.
Maybe that's why they're doing so well this year.
Yeah.
That's a good point. But no, I think the A's, I mean, the A's have always been a very solid team and a team that like has relied on these players that are just defensively sound and just play baseball the right way. You know, nothing too grandiose. And I think this year they've really, especially with the Astros just kind of collapsing, they've just had this opportunity and they just took it. So I think that the A's are you know, they're not bad. I mean, they had a rough time because they had like the wild card games against the Yankees, and you know, wild card games for me are always tough because someone ends up losing, obviously, in a one game series who could have maybe won in a 5-game series or a 3-game series. So it's tough for me to, when you lose a wild card game, for me to say that you're a bad team or you didn't deserve to be there. But this year, they're not going to have to deal with that. So it might be interesting to see what happens in a full-on series. And I think they'd be playing, they're the second seed, so they'd be playing.
Well, they get to pick.
Oh, right. But like, the Rays are probably going to pick, you know, the eighth seed, which is probably.
I would pick Toronto, and then the White Sox, I would. So if you're the White Sox, right, and the Rays pick Toronto, presumably.
Okay.
They're probably the worst team in, right? Like, I think we could agree on that.
Yeah.
So if you're the White Sox, here's your remaining options. The Yankees, the Twins, the Astros, and the Indians.
Who do you pick?
Who are you picking? I mean, I don't want to, you know, I'm biting my tongue here, but the Astros are obviously the pick, right?
I'm going Indians.
Really?
I'm going Indians. I think you said it earlier that I think that offensively you feel like you might be able to contain them.
But that first series in your home ballpark, like what concerns me about the Indians.
Well, it's not their home ballpark.
Well, no, but like the top seed gets the home ballpark.
Oh, like they're the home team.
For that first series, yeah, they're technically the home team. Like three games, you want to see back to back to back, like Bieber, Plesac, like I don't know.
I the thing is the pitching is probably good. That's a good point, the pitching. I guess it's a question of what do you value? Yeah, what do you value? Like, where do you think you can contain them? Because you feel like you can contain their offense and then, you know, maybe get a couple runs in on their pitching, then you go for the Indians. If you feel like you want someone that's more offensive heavy just so you don't have to deal with the pitching, you go the Astros, right? Because the Astros' offense, I think, that even given their struggles, can catch lightning in a bottle. Mm-hmm. And if you face them in a 5-game – I'm worried of facing them in a 5-game series and having them
– They worry me too because this whole pick your opponent thing, right, is automatically bulletin board material, and the Astros are already pissed. And, you know, now you're going to get them for 3 games.
Yep.
They're experienced playoff team, and you know they're better than they're playing. And now they're even more pissed than they already were. It's dangerous. That's why I picked them, but now I'm kind of backtracking on that too. I don't know who I'd pick. I don't know.
It's between the two of them for sure. I think you don't want to face the Twins. I think you don't want to face the Yankees. I think no one's going to pick the Yankees.
I don't think so. I don't think you can.
Yeah. I think that the teams that are going to get picked are the Astros and the Indians, obviously. And then the Yankees and the Twins are going to face each other.
I might pick the Twins. The Twins don't really scare me.
If you were the Athletics, you'd rather pick the Twins than the Indians or the Astros?
Maybe not now. I don't know. I don't know who I'd pick. I really don't.
If the Astros had like their normal team, let's say Verlander was coming back.
No way I'm picking them. No way. Yeah,
no, like that's I'm not picking them at all. But given the situation that they have, which is like Greinke and then the rest of the team or the rest of the staff, essentially, I think that they would be my third choice. They'd be like after the Indians, or maybe even before, based on how you're feeling.
Yeah, I mean, the American League playoff field is good.
Yeah,
it's good. After Toronto, like I feel like all those teams could win their first round series.
Absolutely. All those teams definitely could. You know, in a normal year, I think that race would be so entertaining.
Yes.
Like, it's still pretty entertaining now, but obviously things are kind of already being solidified. The Blue Jays are the weird one because I think everyone knows that you don't really deserve to be here. This is just because you got lucky. But speaking of that spot, though, with the Blue Jays, coming to the year, I predicted all those teams to be in that, like, maybe not in the order that they're in, but to be in the playoffs, except for the Blue Jays, and I thought it was going to be the Angels.
Yeah, if you're the Angels, like as we're kind of wrapping up the show here, if you're the Angels, going into this offseason, right? Where do you go from here? What do you do?
I mean, you should have done.
You gotta go all in on Trevor Bauer, right?
I mean, yeah, you should. You should go into the next the offseason. You should do what you should have done last year, and focus all your energy on pitching.
Yeah.
Signing Rendon, like, obviously Rendon is a great player, and I don't at all blame them for wanting to go after Rendon in terms.
Now you're just going to lose games 10-6 instead of 10-5.
Exactly. You know, you can't. You're trying to build around Mike Trout. And I understand that, but, you know, the offense isn't really the problem. I mean, yes, it is a problem, but when you look at your immediate concern, it's the pitching. I mean, Mike Trout can only score so many runs, and even now you got Rendon. Him and Rendon can only score so many runs. You know, let's say they hit a home run four times in their four at-bats. That's eight runs that you just scored. Your pitching's going to give up 10. So it just makes no sense to me that they didn't. Last year's field was really good. They had a lot of good pitchers. They had Ryu. Right, the Blue Jays picked him up. That was a great pickup from him. Keuchel even was there. Maybe they could have tried to compete with the Yankees more in Cole. They might have actually tried to.
I don't know if they had the financials to pay both Rendon and Garrett Cole that much.
Oh, no, I'm not saying – I'm saying, like, instead of going after Rendon.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Dips first, and then maybe if they got Rendon. Maybe if they didn't, it doesn't matter. I think this is what they should have done. I think that they were too – I think they tried for Cole and then kind of whiffed. And then
they were like, all
right, now it's Rendon time. But I think that they had so much money at that point that they were ready to give for Cole. They could have spent, they could have brought in at least two, they could have brought in Ryu and Keuchel.
Yeah.
Like, that's a huge improvement already.
Yeah, you're right.
But they didn't. They just went for Rendon, and then I was like, that's, we're going to call it a day.
So, like, they go in, all in, like, we've agreed that they should probably go in all in on Bauer, right? This offseason? Yeah.
I don't even know
those. If they don't get Bauer and they bring in like only a guy like Stroman and then like a couple of depth rotation pieces instead of Bauer and some depth, if they get a guy like Stroman and some depth, that's kind of a failure, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely a failure. And I think
I'm not saying Marcus Stroman sucks, but he's like a good three.
He's not an ace. I mean, even for me, Bauer is a really good pitcher. He's an ace in terms of like where they are right now. He'd be there.
I think this year he solidified himself as an ace, in my opinion.
Okay. Maybe this year solidified himself. But I still think that you know, he could have – they had so much potential going into it. And even if they you know, didn't sign Rendon, let's say, and went after Ryu and Keuchel, and let's say they only got Ryu, then they have that same money still for next year for a Bauer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They would have had so much flexibility in the next kind of – and I don't know about 2021 free or 2020, you know, two free agents, but in terms of right now, we had a good class of pitching free agents that they could have picked from, and they didn't. So that's a really big question mark on, you know, what is their plan of attack? Are they just gonna try to beef up on offense and hopefully like get them through? Because I think we've shown in the past couple of years that you don't win the postseason on offense. Like, you can have a decent offense,
you're
not going to get anywhere if you don't have pitching. That's just, and you have to have pitchers that give you length, because your bullpen is going to get expended so hard. And it's just, I don't know what their plan is, because I, you know, they signed Trout to this really big deal, which told me at least that they were like, we see you as the face of us for the future. We're going to win a ring with you here. If they don't want to ring in the next 12 years, I don't know what to say. What?
Massive failure.
Massive failure. Like, colossal failure. I mean, Trout retires in the next 12 years for sure, right?
Probably doesn't. Yeah, I mean, he's
going to go beyond 12 years. And he doesn't want to ring with you if he stays on the Angels. That's pathetic.
Yeah. No other way to describe that.
Yeah. So... oh, that's a big question mark. That can be something we can discuss next time, and where the Angels are going to go. But by the next time we speak, the playoffs will be pretty much there, so we'll have everything kind of solidified. And that'll be kind of an interesting kind of analysis into the game one matchups. And
we'll have a name.
And we'll have a name, which will be really exciting. So hopefully we'll have a name by the time this is released as well. So that's it. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Jerry, thank you for doing this with me. I'm really excited for the future of this.
And we'll see you guys next week.